This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. It's not Friday until we say it is, people. The past 5 days in business and economics straight ahead, which means, of course, that it's Friday now. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is, as I said, Friday, the 24th of April. Great, as always, to have you with us, everybody. We've got global economic news. We've got corporate economic news. We've got capital markets economic news. So, yeah, let's just dig right in. Here for our weekly wrap are Felix Salmon from Fusion and Jolene Kent from Fox Business. Hey, guys.
Hello, Kai.
All right, so, Felix, here's what I want you to do. I want you to set your cynicism about the stock market aside for me. Okay.
Is that possible?
Well, no. Come on. Bear with me. Set it aside. Acknowledge that the NASDAQ is at a record high, right?
Biggest in nominal terms.
Nominal terms, yeah. Let's not go there, right? But highest it's been since the dot-com boom and bust. I want you to do some compare and contrast. Is it more real now, in nominal terms, than it was back then?
Oh, definitely. I mean, if we normally judge stock prices by this ratio called the P.E. ratio. Mm-hmm. It's basically how many, you know, what's
price to earnings.
Price to earnings. What's the price of the stock market in terms of the actual earning power of the companies? And it's a fraction now of what it was back in 2000. In fact, it looks pretty modest compared to the rest of the stock market. Tech stocks are not trading at high multiples. There's nothing particularly frothy about what's going on in the NASDAQ right now.
Which is, Joe, promising, yes?
Yeah, definitely. We're talking about tech stocks that actually weigh less on the overall NASDAQ than they did mm-hmm. in 2000. So that's good news. And also, it's the real
internet. That's not good news. We want tech stocks to be doing well. They're less than half of the NASDAQ.
No, I'm saying the overall market cap, though, right. It actually is like 43% versus 65%
back in
2000.
Let's keep it out of the weeds here, people. Let's keep it out of the
but
weeds.
Look, think about it. We exist and live in the web. It is a completely different landscape. Right. We depend on it for our livelihood and for all of our revenue. So it seems to be.
And yet, less than half of the NASDAQ is tech stocks, which just goes to show that technology is not that impressive as far as the stock market is concerned.
All right. That's a whole different set of interviews. And I've only got 2 minutes and 47 seconds left before I have to say goodbye to you guys. So, Felix, your second favorite topic. You ready?
I'm ready.
This is like the Felix Salmon hit parade here. You ready?
Felix, Argentina?
No. Greece.
Oh, I love Greece.
So a meeting in Riga, Latvia today with European ministers. Yanis Varoufakis was there. All these European finance ministers saying really mean things about the Greeks and Varoufakis, like they're not going to be able to do it and they're basically insufferable.
Yeah, the European finance ministers really hate the Greeks and they really hate Yanis Varoufakis, the Greek finance minister, and they are throwing all manner of invective in his direction and basically threatening to kick him out of the euro if he doesn't do what they say. And, you know, he is not making the kind of mollifying noises that they want him to make. My base case is that they are making all of these angry noises right now because ultimately, at the very last minute, they're going to wind up writing the checks.
Of course.
But it looks nasty. Yeah. It looks really nasty.
So, Joe, you agree, right? They're going to write the checks and this is all just sound and fury signifying nothing.
It just sounds like kabuki theater as we keep going through these deadlines, quote unquote. It's like a crisis that seems relatively manufactured and yet you still have these huge differences and Greece hasn't really submitted any of those reforms they're supposed to submit to get their stuff organized. So it seems with this May deadline coming up, is it just going to be more of the same? It feels like it.
Yes.
There are so many deadlines, though, Joe. This is the thing.
Yeah, see, that means
eventually
nothing, right?
One of them
means nothing.
Eventually one of them is going to wind up coming, you know, to biting grease in the backside.
All right. In other polite radio words. Joe, the corporate news of the week, Time Warner Cable and Comcast, it fell apart, as we know, this morning. We're not done yet, though, with mergers and acquisitions in this space, because as you said up at the top, this whole content and broadband thing is everything now.
Yeah, it really does seem like we're just at the beginning. You've got Charter with that big stake from Liberty, and you know, the good thing here for Charter, at least in their attempt, is they don't own a TV network. So you're looking at a completely different set of concerns if the government is going to weigh in again and have a role in this.
Felix, thoughts?
I'm glad that the government killed this one. And I'm hopeful that maybe now we have become a bit emboldened to kill mergers which are clearly bad for consumers like this one was.
Do you believe that, though?
Well, they did this one and no one really expected them to.
But they did it by like innuendo and, oh, we might take it to an administrative law judge. It's not like they came down and said, no, this is bad for consumers.
Whatever works.
There was just too many interests involved. They couldn't have done that.
Rules to live by from Felix Salmon. All right, you guys. Felix Salmon from Fusion. Jolene Kent from Fox Business. She, by the way, has a podcast out. Remind me what it's called. Fast Forward, right?
That's right.
All right, there you go.
On
it's
iTunes.
On iTunes and all that good stuff. And Felix, should I give you your due, Felix? What's yours called? Just because everybody's
it's
podcasting.
Slate
you.
Money.
Slate Money. There you go. All right, have a good weekend, you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Guy.
Traders took it easy this Friday. Not a whole lot going on Wall Street, records aside. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. One thing we didn't get to, the three of us, was corporate profits, which is kind of too bad because we are coming up on a week that will be thick with what will surely be closely watched corporate profits. Apple, Twitter, UPS, and ExxonMobil report next week, to name just a couple. But it was Amazon's earnings this week that caught Wall Street up short. For the first time, Amazon broke out the numbers on its cloud computing services, or Amazon Web Services, if you want to get the branding in there. Revenue, roughly $1.5 billion. Profit, $265 million. The forecast for this rapidly growing piece of Amazon's business? Cloudy, but in the best possible way, as Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports.
Amazon basically just revealed to the world that it owns the cloud and it's raining profit.
Yeah, I mean, really firing on all cylinders.
Colin Sebastian is a research analyst at Robert Baird. And the cloud, of course, means giant servers humming along all over the planet, storing data and running programs. Businesses love that because instead of buying all their own tech, they can rent from Amazon.
The reason they dominate is they created this market.
Amazon started as an online marketplace for everything. And to be that marketplace, it had to build more and more servers.
And they woke up one day and realized that they could sell that same service to other companies.
Right now, Amazon's cloud service has a 17% profit margin. But, says Colin Gillis with BGC Financial,
the concern is can you maintain the profitability, particularly as competitors want to pursue this marketplace and they're going to be aggressive on price.
Microsoft, Google, and IBM are far behind Amazon, but they are racing to catch up.
It's going to be tough for competitors to gain share.
Gene Munster is an analyst with Piper Jaffray. Amazon's web service, AWS, already has more than 1 million customers, including Netflix and NASA.
Now what we're seeing is businesses are standardizing on AWS. That means they're building applications that are optimized for AWS, and that just creates more stickiness.
Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos has said web services could one day outsize Amazon's retail business, which might be a good thing. The retail side posted a loss last quarter. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Couple of items now from the CEOs aren't like the rest of us file. Item number one, General Motors said today that its CEO, Mary Barra, made $16 million and change last year, most of it in stock awards that she can't cash in just yet. Item two, Doug Parker, who runs American Airlines, sent a letter to employees this week in which he said he is not going to take any cash compensation, just company stock. Thank you very much. Marketplace's Stan Alcorn has more on CEO pay not really being about cash anymore.
Time was, CEO pay came in the form of a CEO paycheck, and maybe a bonus. Aaron Boyd at executive compensation firm Equilar says cold hard cash has its benefits.
If you're buying a house or sending a kid off to college or doing anything like that, it's good to have cash. The downside to it is obviously that once you get it, that's it.
The money won't disappear if the company fails, but also won't grow if the company prospers. And therein lies a downside for the shareholders.
The obvious thing to do for the CEO would be to just, you know, relax, gently slack off on our dime.
That's Lalitha Naveen, finance professor at Temple University.
If you want to prevent that, then you want the CEO to think like a shareholder.
Regulators and shareholders have tried to change their thinking, first by shifting more CEO pay into stock. It's now about 65% for the big S&P 500 companies, according to Equilar. And second, by shifting more of that stock into a bucket that's tied to further performance metrics. Here's finance professor Kevin Murphy.
For S&P 500 CEOs now, it is the biggest bucket.
He says that sounds good on paper. Give CEOs stock only if they, for instance, increase earnings per share by a dollar in the next year. But
executives understand that if they perform too well this year, it's just going to be harder to get a bonus next year.
Murphy thinks this has only multiplied the ways for CEOs to game the compensation system. I'm Stan Alcorn for Marketplace.
Consider this next statement a truism of, well, I was going to say a truism of American capitalism, but it's more like just a general truism, really. When there are millions of dollars on the line, hundreds of millions of dollars to be just a bit more accurate, people get a little testy. Case in point, the upcoming Floyd Mayweather-Manny Pacquiao fight, for which the take will be in the aforementioned hundreds of millions of dollars, but also for which tickets just went on sale yesterday because the various promoters, venues, and fighters' camps couldn't quite see eye to eye on who got what. Everybody's happy now, though, so the bell will sound as scheduled a week from tomorrow night. Kenneth Shropshire joins me from the Wharton Sports Business Initiative with a little context on this whole thing. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Structure this thing for me, if you would, in terms of how it's all going to break out. There's pay-per-view, there's the gate, which is triple any other gate. I mean, it's big.
I mean, real big. Tickets are going from here as much as 5,000 up to some 100,000 if you're right there on the floor. The other place we're seeing a new number is for the weigh-in, $10 per ticket on that.
Really? That's like paying to see spring training. I never understood that.
It used to be free, right?
Yeah.
The big piece to keep an eye on is what overall is going to go to each boxer, the 60% split going to Mayweather and the 40 to Pacquiao. What does that turn out to be in the end? I mean, that's going to be the biggest number of all time, I believe.
How do you make sense of the fact that boxing culturally is not what it used to be? I mean, this isn't Frazier Ali. It's not the Thriller in Manila. It's not, you know, George Foreman, any of that stuff. And yet the gates and the purses are bigger than ever.
It's guys that are 5 years past the moment when they should have been having this fight.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's kind of a delayed gratification. We've been waiting for this one. And there just aren't that many big names out there anymore. These are kind of the last two. And they're in the classic weight category, this 147-pound category. This is the Sugar Ray Leonard. This is the Sugar Ray Robinson. This is the big time. It's not the heavyweights. This is where people are excited to see someone that's closer in size to the average man.
Yeah, it's interesting that the gate, while the actual gate for the MGM Grand is, you know, triple any previous boxing record, the real money here is in pay-per-view, right? $89.95 to watch it at home, and then there's all the bars all over the country who are going to be airing this thing.
No, that's it. Through the history of boxing, the whole evolution of that from closed circuit up to this pay-per-view, that's been the number that has grown and grown. And this kind of overall in sport, if you think about it, we go from the live gate being the big concern to across sports, and boxing just magnifies it. It is the viewership. It is the idea of how can you get people to pay by not being there to get their eyeballs on it and get the information and not get it secondhand.
The two guys in the ring aren't the only ones who are, you know, sort of working together, if you will, on this thing. HBO and Showtime each own various parts of this deal and are working together to get it on the air, as it were.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's two different paths, two different promoters, two different broadcast entities. But this has been part of the nature of this whole deal. The difficulty in these two guys coming together to box has been that they built up successfully their own businesses, and the idea of how do you bring them together has been part of the difficulty, you know, apart from a lot of the other sideshow.
Yeah.
So the idea that these two broadcasting entities are working together is, you know, is another big, you know, kind of undertold story.
Also, for what it's worth, two fighters with sort of different personalities, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they both kind of have the humble beginning kind of story, but in terms of the flashiness and the criminal encounters and that sort of thing, I mean, that's the Mayweather side. And then you got Pacquiao, who in the Philippines is a politician, a guy who's been trying to go to school and get degrees and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Last question. You going to watch? You going to shell out the $89.95?
You know, I'm going to try to be somewhere where it's being shown.
There you go.
I'm not making the arrangements, but I'll be somewhere where it's been arranged.
Fair enough. Ken Shropshire, he runs the Wharton Sports Business Initiative at the Wharton School. Ken, thanks very much.
All right, anytime. Take care.
We've got the timeline of exactly how this fight came together and how it got held up at various points along the way at our website. It's marketplace.org. Coming up.
A theater owner could watch a trailer back home, but this is a way to sort of make them feel special and give them attention.
CinemaCon. It's a thing, apparently. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 21 points today, a 10th percent, 18,080. The NASDAQ rose 36.7 cents percent, ending things at a record 5,092. The S&P 500 up 4 points, 0.25 percent, finished at a record 2117. For the week, for the past 5 days, the Dow up 1.4%. The NASDAQ added 3.33%. The S&P 500 picked itself up 1.8%. Tech stocks were up. Amazon up 14% on those earnings reports we were telling you about earlier. Microsoft click up 10.4% today on better-than-expected quarterly profits. Google up 2.9%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note down to 1.91%, and you are listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. In Washington, Loretta Lynch is scheduled to be sworn into the office of Attorney General. Watch out for Apple quarterly earnings, slated to be released. And in baseball circles, Monday is Babe Ruth Day. Fans honored the Hall of Famer on April 27, 1947 at Yankee Stadium before his death from cancer. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. And I think the best way to set up this next story is just to say we're all going to get older, every single one of us. And when older people get sick and have to go to the hospital, once they're discharged, they're often back in the hospital within just a couple of weeks, because the nursing homes that they're in can't treat them. One possible solution, as Gretchen Kuda-Crowen reports, is to change the way hospitals and nursing homes interact with each other and with their patients.
Thanks to advances in medicine, elderly patients now live much longer. But they're also much sicker, and skilled nursing facilities are often ill-equipped to handle patients in need of such high levels of care. David Rubin is chief of geriatrics at UCLA School of Medicine.
Once they're discharged from the hospital and go to either home or to a skilled nursing facility, that kind of level of attention, that kind of level of monitoring, that kind of level of immediate remediation just isn't possible.
The result is that growing numbers of medically fragile patients are sent by ambulance to local emergency rooms over and over again. That's frustrating for patients, and it's expensive, explains Brian White, president of Northwest Hospital in Baltimore. In an effort to reduce hospital readmissions, White prompted his hospital to bring the doctors to patients rather than the other way around.
We're looking at bringing our resources to the bedside rather than putting them in an ambulance, putting a patient in an ambulance, and sending them to a facility that supposedly has those resources.
Good morning, Ms. Tokowitz. How are you feeling today?
Doing, I think, a little better. Thank you.
Dr. Raymond Miller works for a group of Maryland physicians called Post-Acute Physician Partners, a group White helped launch in March of this year. Today, Miller is checking up on Dorothy Turkowitz. She's a patient at Levendale Geriatric Center in Baltimore, Maryland, where she's recovering after a hospital stay.
Have you been getting rehab and walking around?
Yes.
Feel a lot stronger than when you came in?
Yes, indeed.
Great.
Miller and his partners follow patients discharged from four Baltimore area hospitals to surrounding nursing facilities. They see patients daily with the goal of heading off problems before they become critical and land patients back in the hospital. In a pilot project with a single nursing home over the last year, hospital readmissions were reduced by about half, says White. And while he says the cost of running the group just breaks even, it adds up to huge savings for the hospital.
You're talking about tens of thousands of dollars for every patient you potentially can impact, times a lot of patients.
White hopes Baltimore will serve as a model for other hospitals to imitate. But not everyone is quite so certain that blurring the lines between hospital and nursing homes will be the panacea, he hopes.
I'm Mary Tinetti, and I'm the chief of geriatrics at Yale New Haven Hospital and Medical School.
Tinetti worries reproducing the hospital setting in nursing homes to care for these patients is less efficient and potentially more costly. Instead, Tinetti argues the real problem is that patients often believe they're getting better when they aren't.
So I think having a more frank and open discussion with these patients might mean that the care that they would prefer would change from having these frequent hospitalizations to perhaps moving to palliative care or even hospice care sooner than currently.
Most experts agree that the model of care being attempted in Baltimore has the potential to reduce readmission rates and even save money. But some question whether those values are true measures of higher quality health care. Tinetti says the real measure of quality is whether a patient's care meets their goals, and that's much harder to quantify than the number of patients coming back to the hospital. I'm Gretchen Kuda-Crowen for Marketplace.
The place to be this week, if you're anybody in Hollywood, was actually Las Vegas. All the stars, directors, and studios were there, showing new footage, full-length films, sometimes on the latest and greatest in sound and theater technology. It's a confab you might not have ever heard of before, CinemaCon. Pamela McClintock from The Hollywood Reporter was there covering the whole thing. Pamela, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
What happens at this thing? I mean, is it, do you have fans there and great characters and new movies? Is it Comic-Con? What is it?
No fans, but the presentations are held in the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace, which is like a cavernous theater. And each studio does their own presentation, and they show trailers, unseen footage, some trot out big stars. So it's, you know, it's really across the board.
Are the theater owners catered to by the studios? Because you got to get the movies out there, right? And if the theater owners aren't in your back pocket, then you're in some trouble.
Right. It's sort of them, you know, giving them a little treat and whetting their appetites. I mean, in this day and age, you know, a theater owner could watch a trailer back home. But this is a way to sort of make them feel special and give them attention.
Is all the money in movies and being a theater owner these days, is it still in the popcorn and the 4-gallon soda sizes and the giant candy bars, or do they actually make money other ways now?
They make money from the movies, but concessions are still where they make the most money.
Yeah. What'd you like upcoming sneak preview wise? What hit you?
On the awards front, it was very interesting. Fox showed footage from The Revenant, which is Alejandro Iñárritu's next movie with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Birdman, right?
Right, Birdman. Yeah. And they also showed some footage from Joy, which is the David O. Russell film that comes out this fall. Mm-hmm. And then, not necessarily an awards movie, but they showed some footage from Ridley Scott's The Martian starring Matt Damon, which looked fantastic.
Also, not to be missed, is Vin Diesel in Furious 8 coming soon to a theater near you.
Right.
Which I can't believe.
You know, Universal was very smart. They waited until their presentation to date both the second and third movies in the 50 Shades of Grey trilogy, as well as Furious 8. And Vin Diesel came on stage Thursday and gave a very emotional speech and then announced the date of the next movie.
Yeah, emotional, of course, because of Paul Walker. He called him, my brother Pablo. Right,
exactly.
Yeah. Do these folks know that this doesn't have sort of the broad cultural thing that Comic-Con does?
Oh, yeah, they're aware of that. It's, you know, it's really a B2B convention where the studios are catering to the theater owners. And, You know, I'd be remiss. We talked about movies at the end of the year, but, you know, of course, every big summer film was touted either through a trailer or footage,
yeah,
including Jurassic World, which seemed to really wow theater owners. Tomorrowland, which is the Brad Bird movie with George Clooney, was another big.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
I'm a Clooney fan. I'll go see that.
Yeah, very interesting. Tom Cruise was sort of the hit of the week. He presented footage from Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, as well as talked about doing the stunt where he's hanging off the side of the airplane, which you see in the trailer. And they showed unedited footage, and you could see the rope where he was hanging. It was pretty incredible.
Oh, come on. Really?
Really.
It was actually him?
It's actually him.
No. Yes. Stunt double. Come on. They're not going to put a gazillion-dollar body out there.
It really is him. He takes great pride in doing his own stunts.
Well, now I'm going to have to go see that movie despite myself just to see if I can see that rope. Pamela McClintock is a senior film writer for The Hollywood Reporter. Pam, thanks very much.
Thanks so much, you guys.
If you want to see Tom Cruise hanging off that airplane, and come on, who doesn't? We've got the new Mission Impossible trailer on our website, marketplace.org, which means I think I don't actually have to go see that movie. This final note today, which falls firmly in the category of A, people having too much time on their hands, and B, stuff that is kind of interesting nonetheless. Students at the University of Leicester over in the UK have figured out, give or take, and you'll know what I mean here in a second, how much paper it would take to print the internet, the whole internet. They started by figuring out what it would take to print Wikipedia. Turns out almost 71 million pieces of paper. Then, using the generally accepted figure of 4.5 billion websites out there and adjusting for font size, pictures, and all that, they say it would take 136 billion pieces of 8.5 by 11 inch paper to print the whole bleeping internet. So how about that? All right, we're out of here on a Friday. The Dow up 21 points, a 10%. The NASDAQ up 36 points, 7/10%. The S&P 500, 4 points higher, 0.25%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace was developed by J.J. Yore. Tommy Andres is the acting senior producer. Deborah Clark is the vice president and executive producer around here. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.